At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
My friends, I am Vivian McPeak, and this is Hemp Present. If you have feedback or would like to suggest a guest or topic for Hemp Present, email me at hemppresent@gmail.com. Pamela DeBar was born in California. As a little girl, she fell in love with rock and roll. While in high school, her friend introduced her to the psychedelic pioneer, Captain Beefheart. At 18 years old, she packed her bags for Hollywood and spent the rest of the 1960s in rock's cradle of civilization, meeting, befriending, or dating all of her and my musical heroes, the Byrds, the Doors, Buffalo Springfield, the Rolling Stones, Led Zeppelin, and countless others. Once Frank Zappa got to know Pamela and her girlfriends, he helped hone them into a performance art music troupe called the GTOs. Throughout her time opening for the Mother's Invention with the GTOs, doing handstands at Jim Morrison's living room, sitting in at protest, accompanying Mick Jagger to Altamont, and nannying for the Zappas, Pamela kept detailed diaries, resulting in her best memoir, I'm With the Band, Confessions of a Groupie, and several subsequent tell-all publications. Today, she is a respected author, journalist, creative writing instructor, podcaster, and rock historian, and has earned the distinction of being recognized as the world's most famous groupie. And the coolest thing about her right now is that she's here. Welcome, Miss Pamela, to Cannabis Radio.
Hi.
I'm such a fan of yours. You were in a dance troupe in the 60s called the Laurel Canyon Ballet Company that danced for various rock bands in L.A., and Frank Zappa signed you to his label as the GTOs, Girls Together Outrageously. Mm-hmm. You did an album, Permanent Damage, and Nick St. Nicholas of Steppenwolf, who you dated, wrote some of the music. There's a track, Miss Pamela and Miss Sparky Discuss Stuffed Bras, where you just talk about stuffing your bras in school. The album's very 60s counterculture, very Zappa-esque, with irreverent avant-garde, in unison, spoken word, and quirky tunes. How did that come about? And did you actually nanny for Dweezil and Moon Unit Zappa later on?
Yes, I certainly did. For many years, I was their governess. That's what I was called. I met Zappa through Miss Christine. She was the governess of Moon at the time. Moon was only 6 months old. We were all in Laurel Canyon. We were already dancing. We were a group of girls, met on the strip, and through a guy named Vito, a really wild dancer, a guy named Vito. And we started dancing with Three Dog Night and Love and bands like that, LA bands, really fantastic bands. And when I met Frank through Christine, with all of us girls, he suggested we dance with the Mothers. Now that's how that started. So we got on stage dancing with the Mothers of Invention. One very specific night, I remember, we all dressed very wildly. People think they're dressing wild now. That's funny to me, because that night we all had on cloth diapers with little duck pins holding them on, bibs that barely covered our boobs, and pigtails and holding big lollipops. That's the way we got on stage with the Mothers. And we soon got kicked off the stage for those outfits. But that's how we dress. We dress sometimes alike, sometimes completely differently, but in a lot of very flamboyant, colorful, vintage clothes from the 20s and 30s back then, sometimes the 40s. And we just were very unique girls. And he saw something in us, listening to our crazy stories, that he wanted to preserve. And he had just gotten a record deal with his own label, Bizarre Straight, and he thought all our stories were worth saving, and he wanted us to write a bunch of songs while he went on the road with the Mothers at one point. And when he got back, he said we can go in and record them. So it was pretty incredible in 1968 to have that happen to a bunch of girls. There were no girl groups, if unless you count in the Motown girls, those kind of girls, Spector girls. But there were no like rock, crazy rock girls at the time.
Right.
Anyone put into a band. And I give Frank all the credit for that, of course. He saw something in us. He pulled out these crazy, wonderful stories that we told on the record. And I'm grateful to him to this day. He basically started my, well, after Captain Beefheart told me I was a gas when I was 16. That helped too. But yeah, it sent me on my way.
We could do an entire interview on Laurel Canyon in those days. But you were a self-declared super groupie during the golden heyday of rock. You dated several of its biggest stars. It would be hard to overstate the raw energy, intensity, and electricity of the 60s and 70s rock scene. I was raised in LA and Hollywood. As a young bean sprout, I hung out at the Roxy and the Whiskey and the Rainbow. While 99% of fans could only dream of being with various rock legends, you consistently penetrated the inner sanctums of rock royalty's creme de la creme. What was your secret?
And they penetrated me also.
Oh.
Oh,
Touché. Touché.
what was my secret? Is that what you said?
Yes. How did you do it?
I was in the right place at the right time with the right look and the right age, the right everything. I was of age, by the way. A lot of people give me shit for being too young. I was not too young. I just met them on the, I hung out at the Whiskey a Go Go. It was my home away from home, and everybody hung out there. So you could, there was no security guards for the Rolling Stones or the Kinks or any of the local bands, the Birds, Love, the Doors. There was no one was protecting those people. They were accessible. And so were we. So were the girls on the strip. We were accessible. And so we just hung out. It was a time that'll never come again. People can't quite imagine it. There
Right.
were actually love-ins, where the bands played for free. And I mean, I took snapshots of the Doors just standing a foot away from Jim. I mean, it was just a different reality. And I do these rock and roll tours. I take people through Laurel Canyon and the strip and tell these stories, and I also do these one-woman shows. I have one coming up in Tucson on the 14th of January and at the Whiskey a Go Go on February 9th. And they sell out. People want to know what happened. Did this really happen? It's like Jim Morrison, for instance, is a myth. It's like, did he really exist? Was
Right.
there really anyone as pretty as Jimmy Page in 1969? People just can't believe that I at the Whiskey a Go Go, a place that holds 200 people, that I saw The Who, Led Zeppelin, and Hendrix in that tiny club. But those are the kind of things that were happening then. So I am alive to tell the tales.
When I was very young, my favorite band was Steppenwolf. I was obsessed with the band. They were my first concert at the Inglewood Forum in 1970. And as I mentioned, you dated Nick St. Nicholas, who played bass in Steppenwolf's earlier Canadian incarnation, Sparrow, and then joined Steppenwolf in 69 for, I
Right.
think, a couple albums. Tell me about Nick St. Nicholas. Was he in Steppenwolf when you were dating him? And what was that like?
Dating well, he actually did take me. So I guess I could say dating. Yeah, he took me to dinner at a place called Stefanino's in his brand new XKE, 1969 XKE Jag. I'll never forget it. He had his own lingo. He still does. We are very good friends to this day. He was a very unique guy. He's German, beautiful blonde German guy. I remember he wore a lot of eye makeup on the Ed Sullivan show one, and it was like, ooh, a man with eye makeup. He was a very unique individual and still is. And yeah, he was my first lover. I had made out with a lot of rock guys. I had gone to third base, etc. But I wanted to be in love. So I fell in love with Nick. And he was the first. And he is on the GTO's album. He is the ooh-ooh man because he used to say ooh-ooh-ooh, schnit, schnit, schnit for no reason at all. He had his own little lingo. And so that's how he became the ooh-ooh man.
Did you meet the other people in Steppenwolf?
I Nick had just left Steppenwolf when we got
Right.
together. He was in a group called Time, Trust in Men Everywhere. Amazing group that never quite made it. They were so good. And so yeah, it was right post Steppenwolf when we were hanging out.
We've got about a minute to the first break. I cut my teeth on the Joni Mitchell album, Ladies of the Canyon. Were you a part of the Laurel Canyon scene? Were you a lady of the canyon?
I believe I was. I was always at the log cabin. I was always hitchhiking through the canyon. I spent a lot of time with Brian McLean of Love, and all the bands lived in the canyon. We hung out at the canyon store. I mean, yes, I would consider myself a lady of the canyon, even though I'm Joni Mitchell.
Love never really got the recognition I think they deserve as a pivotal band of the LA scene. You agree?
Totally. Love are so important. And Johnny Eccles is still a good friend of mine, original guitarist. And I have a podcast with him, Pamela DeBar's Pajama Party. I interview a lot of very cool musicians, including Nick St. Nicholas, by the way. So, yes, Love was the most important band in Laurel Canyon at one point.
Right,
And
right.
yeah, definitely.
I'm talking to Pamela DeBar, and I love this interview, and we're going to be right back.
Time to roll out for the people that let us hemp present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
We're back with Pamela DeBar. Pamela, I played in bands. I'm no rock star, but I played in bands for 25 years, and I was lucky enough to be at the center of the grunge scene here in Seattle in the 90s. And
Nice.
even I enjoyed my share of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, just not necessarily in that order.
Yeah.
The rock and roll world has always been pretty much a hedonistic orgy of excess with debauchery and carnality just built into the package. Today, and even before the Me Too era, some folks slut shame and virtue signal the very idea or concept of a groupie. What do you say to the prudish folks who condemn what they might characterize as the lascivious rock depravity of the rock era and phenomenon?
Well, we were all young. We were all hot and young. And everyone hot and young wants to have sex. Am I correct? So we just happened to have sex with each other as beautiful young groupies and beautiful young musicians. And there was nothing wrong with it. They wanted us there. There's all kinds of quotes from people like Robert Plant, who say, and Gene Simmons, and say they love groupies. Groupies are very important. Groupies spurred the music on, and they wanted us there. I got to be on the side of the stage with the Stones and the Who and the Doors and the Mothers, of course. And that's the best place to be. That hardly exists anymore. They don't allow people on stage anymore, but in those days, I remember once with Zeppelin, Richard Cole, the roadie, the main road manager, he ushered me on stage and said, "This is Mrs. Page. You wouldn't want her to be, sit in the audience, would you?" I mean, just stuff like that was so
Right.
magical. And that night, like Jimmy would, tear my clothes off, and that's what I wanted. Nothing was wrong with it. It was all completely consensual. I was of age, and it
There's
was.
a time and place for everything, and that was the time and place for.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
That, right?
Yes, and it should still be. There's no reason people shouldn't explore their sexuality. And feminism to me is a woman doing what she wants to do. A groupie was never a submissive character. We were exactly where we wanted to be. We were not being taken advantage of by these men. It was not that. They try to paint that picture Like, oh, you poor, you poor girls were taken advantage of by these monsters. That was just not the case. We wanted to be around that creative mass that, even during that time frame, I knew it wasn't ever going to come again. This renaissance, this musical, spiritual, sexual renaissance would not come again. So I reveled in it.
You mentioned things are not the same today. Chapel Roan has catapulted to stardom in a short amount of time, and she has recently complained about invasive fans who follow her around and have stalked her family. Do you have any thoughts on how different the environment is today for fans and celebrities compared to decades ago with social media today and the ferocious celebrity tabloid environment we live in?
Yes, of course. It's really gotten scary for a lot of people. And I'm sorry that she used the word fan, because a fan isn't really someone who would do something like that to harm the person that they admire. A fan is usually someone, yes, it stems from fanatic. So I guess, an obsessive fan could do these cruel things, but that was never in our thoughts back then. It was more of a merging of creative love and energy. It was a like what Frank Zappa saw in me and the other girls, and what Captain Beefheart saw in me the day we met. It was a connection. Connections could be made that cannot be made now.
It
So
was
people.
on a human level back then still, right?
Yes, and people that obviously have to resort to these crazy things to try to get near these people that they admire. In those days, we didn't have to go resort to any of that stuff. We could just get near, we could go to a love-in and just sit down next to Stephen Stills. I mean, it was a different time. And
Right.
so that's why I think people are so fascinated by it and come to see me talk or come to on my tours or whatever. I mean, I'm just someone who lived through it, and I'm still able to tell the tale. So I'm very grateful for this late in life career I've created by doing these one woman shows.
You're an actress, even appearing in Zappa's legendary 200 Motels movie, and you published multiple memoirs, including I'm With a Band, Confessions of a Groupie, 1987, Take Another Little Piece of My Heart, Groupie Grows Up, 1993, which are assumed by some to be inspirations behind the Cameron Crowe film Almost Famous. You mentioned what you're doing these days. I heard rave reviews from friends about your recent show at the Rabbit Box here in Seattle. What can
Oh,
people expect to see at your events these days?
I tell the stories from my books, only I elaborate and remember things just by reading them aloud and talking about them. I go, oh, wow. Oh, this happened too that night. Jim said this. Jim, oh, look, here's what happened backstage with Zeppelin. New things come to my mind that happened. So it's not just a reading. It's not just a talk. It's an interactive thing. There's a question and answer period too. I interact with the audience during the show. I play snippets of music that, I start with Elvis, the song Treat Me Nice just changed my life when I was 8 years old, all the way up to, Michael, my ex-husband, who I met in 74. So it takes place from like early 60s to the mid 70s, what I talk about during the show. And it's just a blast. The whiskey, a go-go, is extra special because so much happened to me there. It's like the walls ooze for me. So I remember things that happened there right while I'm on the stage talking about it.
Spill the beans, Miss Pamela, of the legends you dated, who impressed you as genuinely good people? What rock stars were awesome human beings, maybe in contrast to the notorious bad boy image, or were they all good people?
None of us are all good people. We all have, I don't know what you want to call it, misgivings. I don't know.
We'll
But
have a dark side.
well, there, yes, that Pete Zeppelin certainly had that dark context. And a lot of it was rumor, of course. But actually, the kindest, funniest, most interesting, self-deprecating bundle of joy was Mick Jagger. He was,
Really?
he was a lot of fun. You can tell now. If you follow his Instagram posts, I mean, he's hysterical. He makes fun of himself. He shows himself exercising for 3 hours before a show. I just saw the Stones and they were so amazing. You know, he's so inspiring. He and Dylan and all the different people.
And he just doesn't, he's an energetic, he just doesn't stop. He's still going. We have a minute till the next break. You are a legend. I know it hasn't been all rainbows and unicorns, but you've led a storybook life. You ever wondered what a normal life would have been like?
Well, I sort of lived a semi-normal life when I married Michael and we had our kid
Right.
and I raised him and I sort of missed.
Mid-70s, right? Or 77?
Mid-70s. We got married actually in 77. Met in 74 on his birthday, actually, Michael's birthday. But I raised my kid. I sort of missed the punk scene, except Steve Jones moved in with us. He was our roommate for quite some time, but I didn't get out to a lot of shows. I was a real mom. But we still had crazy parties and stuff. We had Trivial Pursuit parties. I remember one night we had Steve Jones, Bruce Willis, and Ozzy Osbourne on the couch. Going off their
The trifecta. Crazy. We are talking to Pamela DeBar. We're going to take another break and come back with our final segment. Don't go anywhere.
Time to roll out for the people that let us hemp present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
We're back with Pamela DeBar. Pamela, this show is part of the cannabis radio platform. I assume that there was a lot of weed smoking back in the day. Do you have any good weed stories about any of these folks?
Well, it was very prevalent. I remember when I had my first toke, man. I was in Vito's bus. Vito was like the Pied Piper of rock and roll Hollywood. That's where I met a lot of the girls who later became the GTOs. Anyway, I was in his van and Brian McLean, who I was crazy about, in of love. He had just told me that as much as he cared about me, we should just be friends, right? And I think I was 17 at this time. And I was so upset about this revelation that when the joint was passed to me, I took my first big hit. And I
Right.
continued to do that for many years. But I thought of it at the time as, oh, I'm not going to smoke pot. I'm not going to smoke pot. I'm going to stay, you know, away from drugs and all that, which of course did not happen. But at
Right.
that young age, that's what I thought. And I remember even in high school, Victor Hayden, who was the Mascara Snake in Beefheart's band, went to my high school. This is how my whole life changed. He took me to meet his cousin, who was Don Van Vliet, Captain Beefheart. And he tried to get me to smoke pot when I was still in high school. And I said, I'm never going to touch pot. But I did. And you know, back in my heyday, you could get a big bag of weed for $10. And I often had it given to me most of the time by guys, you know, by fellas in my presence would give me however much pot I wanted. So yes, I definitely smoked pot.
Yeah, I grew up in LA and you have $10 for a four-finger lid of Mexican commercials, but you'd have to clean the seeds and the stems out. And there's probably a lot of pot smokers never seen a seed and a stem these days. Right. I mean, it was just such a different time. We only have a few minutes left. What final thoughts would you like to leave us with?
Well, my next book is called Sex, God, and Rock and Roll. It's my third memoir, and I'm writing it now. It is about my spiritual journey that went alongside my rock and roll journey, my writing journey, and it's just what I've learned about who we are in this world, who we really are down deep, who we are, where we come from, where we're going, what is meaningful. what we can let go of, what we need to keep. You know, it's a very deep look at my life, and that's what I'm working on now, along with all the other stuff I do.
You know, one of the coolest things from my perspective is that, you know, these people are myths. They're like bigger than life. They're seen by people as demigods, but they're actually just people, you know, who happen to be in this situation, right? And be successful at their craft. But you got to know them as human beings, right?
Yes, sure did.
That's really a kind of a blessing, isn't it?
Yes, it is in a way. Of course, we all have foibles, and we tend to disappoint each other as well. But I did learn that we're all one during that time frame, which is I still believe we're all totally connected. It helped me realize that. I think the artist and the receiver of the art become one during that time frame. I've experienced it most recently in Springsteen shows, where everyone in the building, or Paul McCartney's recent show, everyone in the building becomes one. And it's the most incredible high. And it's because of that oneness that we reach that pinnacle of humanity, you know?
And music is really transcendent, right?
Yes, it is.
That was a time we need that magic, that love vibe. The we need something that we had back then that we don't have now, man. That's all I gotta say.
Yes, I agree. And I believe, I know this may sound cruel, but the people like even Elvis and James Dean, you know, these people that were rebellious, broke the rules, created a new reality, you know, all the way through Kurt Cobain, they're going to be remembered more than many of the people performing today, I'm sorry to say, you know, because these people were created this sound, this unbelievable thing that continues to this day, rock and roll music. And it's
And in this day of formula stuff, I mean, you had people like Bob Dylan, and these people were poets. But
that's for
unfortunately,
sure. I'm a Dylan freak, yes.
we are running out of time. Pamela DeBar, you are amazing. I could be your groupie. Thank you so much for being
Thank you.
on
Thank you, Jimmy.
Hempersand. And I just, you know, I'm thankful for you sharing all of your amazement with us.
Well, I enjoyed it.
All
Thank you
right.
again. Bye, Vivian.
Absolutely. Bye. The Hempersand intro music is 7 Mile Beach by Joanne Rand, and the outro music is Take Back the Planet by Steppenwolf. Bush. See you next time, folks. Stay strong.
Marijuana!
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.